And we were hoping this will be available. Diane said she'll be able to put it up on her website. And I just want to say about Diane, hold on one second here, people. Here we go. Diane has been a professional astrologer since 1973. She's helped thousands of people around the world. She's taught hundreds of classes, been on numerous radio shows, mine included, and has had more than 100 articles published in astrology magazines, including Mountain Astrologer, Del Horoscope, and American Astrology. She offers birth charts, yearly forecasts, horary astrology. She has extensive experience in helping people understand themselves, including how to improve relationships. She wrote a book called Extraordinary Relationships Through Astrology. I have read it, and I would say that even if you don't know a lot about astrology, it's actually a pretty worthy book that is worth looking at and taking a peek at. It's available at her website or through Amazon.com. You can find her website at www.diannelawson.com. And because we're Zooming instead of having physical meetings, Diane is coming to us from Kansas. So welcome, Diane, and let me know when you want your slides up, but start talking.
Okay. Well, I don't think you can understand the Bible unless you use astrology to try to make sense of it. I think the entire Bible is written in astrology symbolism, and I think all the crazy kind of stories that I've never been able to make sense with start making sense if you use astrological symbolism. So I, as a professional astrologer, you know, I have to be obsessed with astrology, but you don't know that I've been really obsessed with the Bible. And it started when I was 5 years old. When I was five, I was living in Berkeley, California. My father was working on his master's in philosophy. And because of his coursework, he was spending a lot of time reading the Bible. And at the same time, there were two neighbor women who were giving Bible study classes to all the neighborhood kids. And one of these neighbor women, I became very close to her and her daughter, and so I spent a lot of time with them. And they would give me a penny for every Bible verse I learned. So of course I start with Jesus wept and got a penny. I thought this was pretty cool. So I was learning Bible verses just by the score, and I must have learned a lot because I can remember having a lot of pennies in my plastic box. So I learned at a really early age that the Bible was important to grown-ups. And so I had started learning to read when I was two, and I started kindergarten when I was four. So when I was five and six, I was in the first grade. I read the Bible word for word, start to finish, the entire first grade. And I didn't understand most of it, as you can imagine. I had no idea what a lot of it was. And so I told myself that when I grew up, I would read the Bible again so that I would understand it, right? Well, I read the Bible two more times, and did I understand it any better? Probably not much. I studied with everybody. I mean, you name the Protestant denomination. I went to Catholic catechism for 4 years. I studied with the Jehovah's Witnesses for 9 months. I studied with more. I just studied with every group, trying to make sense of the Bible. And then when I was, I think it was when I was 21, I started getting obsessed about astrology. I had my chart done by a real famous astrologer. I'm sure some of you know about Zipporah Dobbins. And she blew me away. I was just so impressed with her. I couldn't figure out how she knew all this stuff about me. So I went to our library and got a pile of astrology books to figure out how she did where she did. And then, you know, here I am many, many, many years later. And one of the things I learned back when I was 21 about astrology is that astrologers have different ages. I mean, we've heard about whether you know, we're going into the age of Aquarius. We're already in the age of Aquarius. And this is one of the questions you all, somebody is thinking about asking me. I don't have a clue when we are going into it or not. I think personally that we are probably in the age of Pisces, but the sub-age of Aquarius, because I still think we have a lot of Piscean attributes. But anyway, I learned that about 2100 years ago, we started the age of Pisces. And then about 2100 years before that, we were in the age of Aries. And then 2100 years before that, we were in the age of Taurus. We would just go back to the signs of the zodiac. And then I also learned that astrologers take the 12 astrological signs, the signs of the zodiac. And they have those signs correspond with or symbolize everything in the universe. Gosh, 20 or 25 years ago, I started once again in another Bible study group. I was going to Unity Church of Christianity, and I went with my daughter and my husband. And it was interesting that we were reading the Bible from start to finish, word for word. We would spend a half an hour reading the Old Testament, and then we would spend half an hour reading the New Testament. And I think it may have been because we were reading the Old Testament right next to the New Testament that I saw this fundamental difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And all of my astrological knowledge kicked in, and I had this light bulb moment where I realized that everything in the Bible, practically, if you use an astrological symbolism, it is telling you something. I had known for a long time there were a lot of these little snippets in the Bible about astrology, and some people interpret them saying proof that God doesn't want you doing astrology, and other people take something out and say, well, this proves that God put them in the heavens for signs and symbols. And I also knew that first the wise men were really astrologers. And what's interesting is the Jehovah's Witnesses and some of the other translations of the Bible actually use the word astrologers instead of magi. It wasn't politically correct to call them astrologers, but.
Then just a little bit louder.
Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Is this better? Okay. But anyway, I was talking about the three astrologers in the Bible. One year I sent out a Christmas card with the three astrologers and called them that. But let's see, where was I going with this? What was interesting is even though the Jehovah's Witnesses called them astrologers, they thought they were evil. So I'm very aware that the Bible is like a Rorschach test, that different people are going to get really different meanings from it. I know Anthony says that, if you talk to five different astrologers, you're going to get 15 different ideas about anything. Well, if you talk to five different people who read the Bible, you're going to get 1,500 different explanations. But I really think that using astrology helps you understand stories that are really hard to understand. And Tony, can we please have the first slide?
Okay, we bring up the first slide. Once again, just try, if at all possible, stay as close as you can to the microphone.
Okay.
Here is the very first slide. Everybody can see that, right?
Okay. These are astrological symbolisms for We'll start with Aries. That's, you know, the symbol that looks like an Aries ram. That's Aries. And keywords for Aries, the animal for Aries is the ram. And it's a fire sign. And it rules the head. It also rules weapons and every sharp thing you can think of, you know, swords and knives. And, it also rules everything that's firstborn. People, firstborn, lambs, and blood. And then Libra is the opposite sign of the zodiac. I see Aries, Libra, as the opposite each other, as kind of a continuum. There's a lot of commonalities between them. But then I want you to go ahead and look at Pisces, down at the bottom, that symbol that kind of looks like a little bit like two fish hanging together. Fish, of course, have a lot to do with Pisces. Pisces rules fish, it rules water, it rules feet. It also rules the top of the head, which seems kind of strange. What I like to envision is a person who is laying on his poor belly. I think that's just more flexible. On their belly with their head lifted up, and then her feet wrapped around to touch the top of her head. And so the Pisces rules the feet and the top of the head. It rules all kinds of liquids like perfume and wine and oil. Has a lot to do with healing, martyrs, saviors, union with God. The opposite of Pisces is Virgo. And Virgo rules virgins and bread. And so the reason why these are up is we're going to look at the Old Testament through these symbols. And the thing that I was suddenly struck with is that everything in the Old Testament is full of warfare and fighting and death and blood. And I mean, God appeared to be vicious and angry, and the people were warlike and treating each other poorly. You know what? I think we have the wrong slide up, Tony, because I wanted, Aries, the Old Testament, but then I wanted pre-Aries. I wanted the Taurus Scorpio along.
You want to get the Taurus one up? Okay, hold on one second. There we go.
Okay. Well, I talked about Aries. Let's talk about. And I'm thinking you're probably getting that you can already think of a whole lot of stuff in the Old Testament that has to do with Aries and Libra, because it's just the Old Testament is full of those symbols. Then, as I was saying, the age before the age of Aries was the age of Taurus. And Taurus, the symbol for Taurus is the bull, and it's an earth sign. Tauruses are extremely stubborn. Taurus rules fruit and tree and ground. And then the opposite sign of Taurus is Scorpio. And Scorpio has a lot of connections with serpent and nakedness. So you're probably getting the picture, you know, some of this is in the Old Testament, but from an astrological perspective, the whole Old Testament is teaching us how to be Aryan. We were supposed to be assertive, we were supposed to be warlike, we were supposed to be learning how to have all the qualities of Aries. We were no longer supposed to be having the qualities of Taurus. That was the old age. We were supposed to be progressing and evolving from Taurus into the Aryan age. And if you notice, throughout the whole Old Testament, the good people were the people who were fighting and warlike and assertive and Aryan. And the bad people were the people who were doing Taurian things. So, and then if you want to go on to the New Testament is teaching us how to be Piscean, and we'll be talking about that. later. But let's go ahead and, Tony, can I see the next slide, which should be the Cain and Abel story? Okay. Tony called this a cheesy picture, but I like it because it's Cain and Abel. And there we have Cain with all these fruits of the earth, and Abel is over there with the lamb. And I can remember reading that when I was a kid, thinking God was pretty capricious. Like, why in the heck did God like Abel but not Cain? They were both giving him, you know, their fruits of their efforts, and it just seemed arbitrary. I didn't understand it, but it just didn't seem fair. But if you use it, the story, from an astrological perspective, it says, you can understand it. The Bible says that Cain was a tiller of the ground and Abel was a keeper of sheep. And not only did Abel give God a sheep, he gave him the firstborn sheep. He gave him the first means. And so that kind of makes sense. You know, Cain was doing Taurus kind of stuff. And he was supposed to be evolving into the area. And you notice there was a fire there, an awful lot of burnt offerings in the Old Testament. Anyway, let's see the next slide, Tony. Adam and Eve, and I love this slide because poor Adam is scratching his head like he doesn't know what the heck is going on. And that's how I felt reading the Adam and Eve story. It just didn't make sense. And I know there are two Adam and Eve stories in the Bible, but we're going to talk about the one that most people know about. But once again, it seemed like God didn't like fruit. And they were naked and they weren't supposed to be, you know, God wanted them clothed. And you notice there's a serpent up here. The serpent is the bad guy. And I love this. I'm going to read you this. This is straight from the Bible. I just think this is a great verse based on what we're talking about. And this is what God said to the serpent. He said, "Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and will crawl on the ground and eat dust of the earth." Cursed above all cattle, what a strange way to write. I mean, cursed above cattle, or cattle cursed. I mean, what the heck? Why was he saying that? And then he was talking not only about earth stuff, he was talking about, he said it three times, ground and dust of the earth. I mean, it's really a strange way to say something's cursed, but it makes sense when you realize that all of those symbolize the Taurian age, and God was saying it's time to leave the age of Taurus behind you and move on to the Aries age. And if you notice, there's a whole lot of fire, a whole lot of stories involving fire in the Old Testament. One of the stories in the Old Testament is the Ten Commandments, and you know, that goes through laws. And if you read the Bible, there are a heck of a laws in the Old Testament, and whole chapters full of laws. And the Ten Commandments are ten laws, but the Ten Commandments story is, do you remember all the fire symbols in that story? There was a pillar of fire, the fire on the mount. And then Moses went up to the top of the mountain to get the Ten Commandments, and he left the Israelites all by themselves. And what did they do? They took off their earrings of gold. And I did say, you know, that the head was ruled by Aries, but and the neck is ruled by Taurus. However, the earlobes are also ruled by Taurus. And the Bible specifically says they took off their earrings of gold, which is ruled by Taurus, and made a golden statue of a bull. And of course, when Moses came down, he was furious and made him so angry, he threw the tablets down and broke them. And the Lord was really angry. And this is what the Bible says, that the Lord said of the Israelites, he said, "They are a stiff-necked people." Well, I've been mad at a lot of people and I've never ever called them stiff-necked. I think that's kind of an unusual way to describe people, but it's a perfect way to call people Tari, and it, from an astrological sense, it makes sense. You know, when they were making a bull, they were reverting back to the old ways of Taurus, when they were supposed to be learning Aryan ways of being and not going backwards. Okay, Tony, can we go ahead and see the next slide of David and Goliath?
Yep, there we go.
Okay, I really like this. I don't know how many of you know that David chopped off Goliath's head and then held it around and showed it off as a trophy. And I could never figure out why God even liked David, because David was a pretty awful guy. He thought he was a real sinner. He did a lot of bad things that he wasn't supposed to be doing. And he was pretty bloodthirsty.
A little bit louder.
And anyway, what David did, we know that he took a slingshot and he hit stone and hit Goliath in the head. And then I think he killed the giant by chopping off his head. And I know when we were studying in the Unity Bible Study Group, we were reading all from our individual Bibles. I happened to take the Catholic Bible, other people took other Bibles. But it said real clearly that David took a slingshot and hit Goliath in the head with a stone and slew him. And then it said he took Goliath's own sword and cut off his head and slew him. And we spent a lot of time talking, reading aloud what our individual Bible's versions were. And what the heck this meant, because you couldn't kill him twice. And we thought, well, maybe we didn't understand what the word slew meant, but we decided that what the Bible meant by using the word slew twice was that he knocked him down and left him unconscious the first time, but he actually killed him by cutting off his head. So, that I want to tell you another story about, David and Goliath. I think it was 2 days after my husband and I heard this story in the Bible study group, and we went to Omaha, primarily to see the Omaha Zoo. And after we spent all day at the zoo, we were walking around in the town, had dinner, and there on the street corner was a man with a Bible on a table with tiny little bottles of water. And he was telling all the passerbys that if we took this Bible test and got all 10 answers right, that he would give us a bottle of water. And my husband and I looked at each other and we thought, oh my gosh, we can do this. And so we filled out the form and we were positive we had all of them right. And before we handed him the paperback, we said, before you grade this, we want you to, we want to talk to you about question number four. And the question number four was, how did David get killed? And the answers were, you know, by a slingshot, sword, poison, arrow. And we marked sword. And we said, you know, we know what this says. And at that time, you know, it was just a couple of days after we had spent a lot of time talking about this in the Bible study. Not only did I know exactly what it said, a couple of sentences, word for word, I knew where in the Bible you could find it. And so I said, you know, the Bible says blah, 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 blah. And so that's why we marked sword. Well, he took a big red X and just marked a big, you know, big red pin and marked a big red X over a long answer. And I said, well, you have a Bible there. Why don't you look at the Bible and see what it says and see what you think? And he slammed the Bible down on the table. And he said, I have the word of God. I am right. And you can go ahead and have a glass of, you can go ahead and take the water, but you didn't deserve it. So we took the water and we couldn't believe it. And that kind of reminds me, I was in Toastmaster for a lot of years and was a Southern Baptist minister. And he really thought and told me often that he had the truth with a capital T, and he knew all the answers of religion, and he was right.
Louder, please.
He was going to heaven, and I'm sure he thought I was not. And but I gave him a brief, I gave a little talk about astrology in the Bible in my Toastmasters group, and all of the members gave me little pieces of paper, little comments, and his comment was, well, it was interesting, but it's against my religion. So anyway, I'm telling you these stories because it's really interesting to me. You know, I'm an astrologer, and so I see the Bible through an astrological lens, but it, you know, and other people see it differently, but it just really, really is a lot easier for me to understand it than it was before. Okay, Tony, can we see the next slide of Abraham and Isaac?
And at all possible, speak as loudly as possible, if you can. Okay, Abraham and Isaac.
Okay.
And as close to the microphone as possible.
Okay, well, I feel like I'm right on. You're going to be looking at my nostrils. That's what it feels like.
I'll keep the slide up. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, this is a story. Oh my God. This story really bothered me when I was a kid. I mean, I did not like this story at all. It was like God was just mean. How could God do this to poor Isaac? And then also, how could he do it to his father, Abraham? But, and the story is, of course, that God asked Abraham to sacrifice his firstborn son. And if you notice, there's not a fire in here, but you can see all these sticks where they were going to burn his body, and probably while he was still alive. But anyway, there was fire involved, and in the Bible, Abraham had his knife in one hand and fire in the other, and so he was going to kill his firstborn son. And then, you know, God said, okay, well, you can sacrifice this ram, put this ram in the fire again. So you can see that whole story, is saying we should be Aryan. It's not saying that we should try to kill our firstborn son to show God we love him. But it cleared that up. But anyway, in the Old Testament, you can see over and over again, it's the good guys that are fighting, the good guys that have fire, the good guys that have swords, the good guys have daggers. They're using weapons, they're chopping off heads, they're burning sacrifices, especially of rams, and they're just being assertive, and that's because that's what they were supposed to be learning. That's the evolution that they were supposed to be at. So, and then we get to the New Testament, and then can we see that, Tony?
The icons?
Yes, the New Testament.
So this is over. Yeah. You want me to go back to the other one, right?
Well, no, we went the other one. We went the...
Okay, this one here. Doing good with the microphone. Stay up there. Okay.
Okay. The, as you can see, we talked about Aries, you know, ram, fire, head, weapons, firstborns, blood, and then... Libra is the side of the body and the laws. And then, but Pisces, and which I said before, but I'll say again so we can keep it fresh in our mind, has a correspondence with fish and water and feet and the top of the head, and lots of different kinds of liquids, wine, perfume, oils. It has to do with healing and martyr and savior and union with God. It also has to do with unconditional love. And then, of course, Virgo, the opposite sign from Pisces, is symbolized with virgins and bread. So, okay, let's talk about the New Testament. And a real first example would be, you know, the birth of Jesus. The shepherds left their sheep to go, you know, sheep were allowed to just fend for themselves. They were leaving the sheep to go, to adore, to love the Messiah. They were following the new model of love. And then, with the Old Testament, we talked about David chopping off Goliath's head. That was okay. That's what the good guys did in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, what the good guys, or what the bad guys did, was chop off John the Baptist's head. And can you see that gory picture, please?
There we go. There we go. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, John the Baptist. That's pretty... The woman looks pretty happy, but I don't think John was very happy. But you can, you know, there's a whole different thing. There was the bad people doing the violence, and poor John the Baptist. You can fish. You know, Pisces rules fish, and there are so many stories of fish and fishermen. Jesus was making them fishermen. Of men, and a real, real major theme of love and connection to God, which is all about Pisces. The Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, For God So Loved the World, was in all the new Piscean age of love. And in the Old Testament, we have so many rules and so many laws. And Jesus said, we now have two laws. Let thy God and thy
Don't get quiet. Keep it there.
Love thy God with thy whole heart, with thy whole mind, and with thy whole soul, and love thy neighbor as thyself. And this is pretty different than, you know, all these. I mean, there were so many rules in that. Okay, Tony, can we see the walking on the water?
Here we go.
Okay, I like this picture because it shows feet and then water, and there were so many symbols.
Stay close to the mic.
Water and different liquids. You know, his first miracle at Cana was turning water into wine. He washed feet. He had fishermen, his disciples.
A little louder, please. Come on.
And bread and wine at the Last Supper, and the miracle of the fish and loaves. He anointed the top of the head. Remember, I said the top of the head was Pisces, and he. Of course, walked on water. So they're just a lot of symbolism with Pisces. And then can we have Jesus on the cross? Can we have that, Tony, please? Yes.
There we go.
Okay. Well, this is a perfect picture of a martyr. I mean, how much more of a martyr can you get than giving up your life? But the whole crucifixion and torture of Jesus. It was the bad guys doing the violence. So they were flogging, there were thorns on the head, sharp things in the head, a spear in the side. Remember, I said the side was ruled by Libra. It's interesting that Libra and all the Aryan things were both there. They took Jesus to a place called Golgotha, which means skull, which is pretty interesting, I think, since Aries was the head. And Jesus didn't respond with violence. He certainly could have, but he didn't respond with violence. And even when, Peter cut off a soldier's ear, Jesus stopped that, and I think he revealed the ear, and just wasn't violent. Now, the thing I really want to stress is that I didn't cherry pick these examples. These aren't random examples. These are things that are throughout the whole Bible. You can, look at the Bible yourself and you can see that these are just the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many, many examples. And I think that using astrology not only explains the whole Bible as a whole thing, but it really plays a story that just don't seem to make any sense, or they're worded unusually or strangely. I think astrology can have a major coherent frame of reference to understanding. So I think you really need to understand astrology, or at least simple symbolism, to get what the Bible's about. I think the people who wrote the Bible knew astrology. I think they also knew numerology, and I wish I knew that better so that I could understand it too. But anyway, I hope you will go to the Bible and using these keywords, especially places where you just didn't understand what was going on, and I think you can have a greater understanding. We talked about briefly, the age of Aquarius is coming, at least I think some of you probably think we're here. You have a good argument, because we're certainly using technology. But the Aquarian keywords are air and mankind, equality, freedom, technology, computers, and astrology. I think astrology is going to be big during the age of Aquarius. I think a lot of unusual, kind of new agey things are going to be big. And then the opposite sign of Aquarius is Leo. And so there's going to be here's a list of Leo words, fire, heart, love, children, entertainment, fun, and creativity. And it might be kind of fun later if I would kind of like to hear other people's ideas about it, whether or not they think we are in the age of Aquarius or not, and if the age of Aquarius is going to be better than the age of Pisces. So I would like to talk briefly about the two charts of Jesus. If you want to show up the Pisces chart first, please, Tony.
Sure. I do want to just pause and briefly mention, somebody had pointed out in the chat room that there are medieval icons of the zodiacs featuring stages of human life. And there's other stuff about how you had mentioned the cutting off of the head, and the person in the chat room who was talking about Rahu in Vedic astrology, also the dragon's head and the dragon's tail, which is the north and south node, he's also getting his head cut off. So it does seem to be losing your head is kind of a theme here in a lot of the spiritual stuff. This is interesting to me. Let's go to the charts of Jesus. This is the Piscean chart, right? Yes. Yes. Okay. Let's see if I can even make the a little larger. Okay. Everybody can see that. Yes.
I don't know how many of you know Moby Dick, but Moby Dick was an astrologer who wrote a book about Jesus, and he used this chart. And he thinks he was also a minister, and he thought he timed it according to the Bible. And when I first saw this chart, I was so enamored. I just really thought that this was the chart of Jesus. And in fact, I wrote an article about it for a magazine. And back those days, as partial payment for writing stories for magazines, the publisher would send me big boxes of of my, you know, magazines that my articles were in. And so I gave them out free to all of my clients and my family members and family that probably whether they wanted them or not. And I was really excited about this. And you can see why I was, my gosh. If you look, you know, Venus is exalted in Pisces. Well, this chart has Venus and Saturn and the Sun and Moon and Jupiter and Uranus all in Pisces. Well, you know, we were talking about he was a symbol for Pisces. He was the martyr. He was the savior. I mean, oh, I think he was a Pisces. And what you can't tell by looking at this chart, unless you look at the numbers really closely, is that all of these Pisces planets are in the third house. And he was a teacher. And he also came to talk about that. But, and then, of course, you know, you see these Pisces things opposed by Pluto, the planet of death. I mean, it looks pretty intense. And then I'm going to say something that I bet a lot of you are not going to agree with, but I think the 10th house rules mother. I think the 10th house in the chart is, has a lot to do with mother, and the 4th house has to do with father. And my old books all say the 10th house is the house of mother. And I think some new astrologers are saying the 4th house is mother because the 4th house corresponds with the sign Cancer, and Cancer is maternal and motherly. And but Cancer is also, and the 4th house has to do with roots, and you get your roots, you get your name and your identity from your father. And I think if people will not only look at the sign of the zodiac and the planets in the 10th house, but they will look at the sign that's on the cusp of the 10th house and see where the ruler of it is located, and I think they would get a really clear picture of their mother. And you can certainly try that with your own chart to see if, you know, if the 10th house gives you a good picture of your mother. But anyway, if you look on this 10th house, look what's up there. Virgo, the sign of the Virgin. I think that's pretty interesting. And then you look at the 4th house, which is the house of father. You see Pisces, which is a really spiritual, you know, Holy Spirit kind of sign. Then if you look at the 8th house, and I'm being very, very simplistic here, and I shouldn't do this because I always look at the entire chart, but if you look at the 8th house, the sign on the 8th house cusp is Cancer, so you look at the ruler of Cancer, and it is the moon in Pisces, you know, he died a martyr. And opposite Pluto, you know, that moon is opposite Pluto, which is pretty gruesome. But that, I thought, wow, this has got to be Jesus' chart, and I was so thrilled. And what? Then...
A little question on my part. You said that you first saw this from Herman Melville wrote Moby Dick, right? But when he was...
Oh, no. The astrologer's name is Moby Dick.
Oh, I was completely confused. Okay, so I'm an astrologer named Moby. Okay, never mind. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so... And then after I told everybody I had the chart of Jesus... I came across chart number 2 of Jesus. And I was like, oh no, this might be the chart of Jesus. Maybe I got it wrong. And the first thing you obviously look at is the grand trine, which, you know, experienced astrologers are not as excited about as beginning astrologers, but that, you know, that looks kind of good. But what's so amazing about this chart is, you know, each of, you know, the sun, the moon, and all the planets, they each have signs that they rule, signs that they're in the rulership of, and that gives them a lot of strength. And if you look at this chart, what you see is you see the moon, the sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, and Jupiter, all in their signs of their rulership. You know, that's a lot of strength. This person had a lot of strength. I mean, he, when planets, you know, the sun, the moon are planets in the sign of their rulerships, they can use that planetary energy well. And I thought, ooh, maybe I got it wrong, you know. And then even in this chart, if you look at the sign on the eighth house cusp is Gemini, and Mercury rules Gemini, and it's pretty close to Pluto, which could be a pretty violent death. And so I thought, well, you know, the first chart is 6 months earlier than the second chart. And, well, John the Baptist certainly was connected to, you know, lots of water. He got his head chopped off and had a violent death. Maybe the first chart is John the Baptist, and maybe the second chart is Jesus. And anyway, so I would love to hear what other people think, and I'm ready to open it up questions, talk about Jesus's chart or anything else I've talked about.
Well, I gotta start by saying, if the first chart was John the Baptist, it makes sense. If Pluto is opposite all those planets, the authorities certainly opposed him and took care of John the Baptist pretty quickly.
Right.
You know, so I could see what you're saying there. Of course, somebody is also asking, it'd be interesting to see the chart of his death, but we don't have that exactly either. I guess an orary chart or a mundane chart for the death of Jesus. But, of course, I'm in charge of the slides here, so I can go back. But I kind of like the go back. The Jesus is a Pisces, just because so much of that Pisces. I mean, if he managed to master the Pluto opposition, it certainly made sense that he would make a transformation to the world. You know, which the story of the Christ is certainly a powerful influence on history,
right?
Regardless of its veracity or not. I'm not gonna challenge anybody's spiritual beliefs. If anybody has questions or anything they want to ask Diane or bring up or their opinions on it, you can unmute yourself and holler and just say your name so I know, you know, who's speaking, in case as long as we're waiting for questions. I do want to mention, somebody did say that and if I'm wrong, correct me, but many Jewish scholars believe that the Garden of Eden was a test that humanity passed, that the serpent was punished for giving them a hint to the answer, and by eating the fruit, they realized they had the ability to act against their nature and could become co-creators with God, and then God sort of then said, you have the ability to create, but it's going to take a lot of work. So that's just one philosophical thought of the symbolism of the snake in the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve. Danny, you unmuted yourself. You got something?
Yeah, Diane, I'm really curious about the rising signs. What you make of Jesus being a Scorpio rising or a Sagittarius rising?
Which chart?
Anything? Oh, I really think that Jesus's ascendant was a Sagittarius. And the reason why is because he was delivering, you know, higher knowledge to us. And kind of interestingly, you know, in this Pisces Jesus chart with the Sagittarius rising of 12 degrees of Sagittarius, my sister, my daughter, and my grandson all have 12 degrees Sagittarius rising. I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but it's an interesting coincidence. So I don't see him as a Scorpio, although he's known for his death. And what's interesting, I think it's really interesting that that the cross would be Christianity's symbol. You know, his torture, you think maybe his empty tomb should be, or, you know, I guess it's the sacrifice. You know, he was all about this sacrifice and this martyrdom, which is Pisces. So I can't quite see the Scorpio ascendant Danny. How about you? What do you think?
Oh, no. I mean, this is...
Lean in, Danny. A little louder.
Jesus, God, we're all having volume issues tonight, right? There must be something. He did talk a lot. He told all these parables. So that just seems more Sagittarius rising to me than, I mean, obviously he was crucified at the end of his life, knocked over the tables in the temple, but he definitely feels more Sagittarius rising than Scorpio. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I would say knocking over the tables in the temple. Mars in Virgo, he was upset that the rules weren't being adhered to. He was upset that, like, this is not where you're supposed to do this in my father's house. So it was almost like that Virgo anger came out of, like, this is not proper. So I could see the passion of, like, that Virgo Mars getting kind of honked off that, like, you know, you're not honoring my dad the way he's supposed to be. Just one thought. I'm just bringing that up as one possibility. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the next chart, let me see if I could pop down to that. See, in this one, Neptune, this one has Scorpio rising, making it with Jesus with a Leo, but Neptune is conjunct the Mars in Scorpio, which certainly could explain some of that table turning also. You don't get a lot of angry Jesus in the Bible. This is the only time I think he's really kind of pissed off. So that's something, we'd have to look at. That's why I'm thinking the Virgo makes sense, because it's, I would suspect Neptune conjunct Mars would make somebody almost irrationally angry at times, because the passion of Scorpio would be there, but Neptune would not necessarily, it's part of a grand trine, but still might not necessarily, it's also opposite the North Node. So mm-hmm. I think that anger could be counterproductive if that was his chart. Of course, we could probably pull up a dozen other charts too, but this is just sort of a fun little game here. Anyway, so anybody else have any comments or any other biblical stuff they want to talk about related to astrology?
Oh, yeah. That's actually good. Guyanne, can you answer that in the comments? Leher Gian, I'm sorry if I butchered your pronunciation. I've been enjoying your comments all night.
And yeah.
Made this point about Jesus being a magician or a sorcerer. Transforming water into wine and bringing Lazarus back from the dead, making the blind man see again. And now that might be Scorpio rising-ish.
Oh. Well, That's a good point. I could probably be talked into either chart, although I'm leaning, that he certainly had a lot of power, a lot of mysterious power. Chris, that could be, I don't know. That's a good point. And I have not looked at the chats because I didn't want to make myself even more, ADD. I wanted to stay on target, but. Okay, here's Neil Wine. Let's see.
Well, he has made interesting comments. Actually, early on, he pointed out that St. Patrick also has a lot of correspondence with Pisces. Captivity, slavery, dreams, and the ship, and then March 17th is the feast day. But that was just a general statement.
I like what Matthew said. Was anybody not bothered by this story as a kid?
Yeah. Abraham, yeah, who's as a kid, you have to freak out. Yeah.
That's what God's like. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I like this. The Garden of Eden represents the entire universe in miniature. Its two trees represent the upper and under worlds. Oh, my goodness. Huh.
For Adam and Eve, I take it both literally and symbolically. I mean, clearly they couldn't physically have been the first two people ever existing. I know there are some branches of Kabbalah that teach that Adam and Eve were the first couple that became self-aware. So they were the first ones that said, hey, wait a minute, who are we? What are we doing here? What's the meaning of life? And so that could be very symbolic of, like, they suddenly ate from the tree of knowledge. They suddenly became aware that there's more to us than just us gardening and eating and, keeping going. So you could look at that of as the symbolism when man became self-aware. So in a sense, that's when we were born, when Adam and Eve became self-aware and suddenly realized, hey, wait a minute, we're not just animals. What's going on here? You know, animals, I think, are blessed with not questioning things. They're kind of on one level very much deeply into the moment. You know, I need to eat. I'm hungry. I'm right here. You know, we get into the joy and horror of saying, what are we doing here? You know, and why are we here? So that's one possible Adam and Eve thing. You know, and then our friend in the chat room is bringing up Lilith. Wasn't she the first woman to be self-aware? You know, let's see what else we got here. Now, somebody's, Sophia, you're saying, I know this is extremely far-fetched, but the houses with most of the symbols in the Jesus chart appear to form a crucified figure. Which Jesus chart you're referring to? The Leo or the Pisces chart? That's the Leo chart. And let me see if I can come on Pisces chart. And here's the Pisces chart. You know, I wonder, the Grand Cross is such an interesting symbol in astrology. I don't want to dominate anything. If anyone wants to say something, you just say, shut up, Tony, and you can talk. You know.
Oh, I had heard, Ilana, I'm speaking.
Okay, hi, Ilana.
Hi. A cross, it might have come, you know, become so important, maybe. In Celtic religions, you know, they have that circle, I think, with the cross, and it's supposed to symbolize like the intersection of spirit and matter. So maybe that kind of fits the symbolism of Jesus more. You have two symbolisms here, one of being crucified and making a sacrifice, and then the other of this, a symbol of matter and spirit being joined. So I think I'd rather go with the Celtic. I think it's Celtic. I'm not sure, but I had heard that some, you know, other religions use it to mean that. It seems like a better maybe symbolism.
Yeah, I like that better. I have to say something about what Bart said is John the Baptist taught us never to lose our heads over a woman.
Wait, what? Can you say that again?
Bart said John the Baptist taught us not to lose our head over a woman.
That's good.
Now, somebody in the chat room is asking, and this verifies to me, like, you know, obviously the shepherds are not going to be in the fields in the middle of December, you know, so we can just dismiss December 25th. But the person's asking, she's heard the myth that Jesus was born in the spring. So the Pisces charts made a certain amount of sense, but she's wondering, so where did the Leo chart come from? Did you mention that?
Well, you know, I cannot remember. I know I got it out of Mercury Hour, which was a great magazine that astrologers from around the world would write to each other within the pages. And of course, this was long before we had the internet. But if I had a question, I could, you know, put something in it and then other people would answer me. And then we'd have workshops once a year where we would all get together and meet each other. It was great fun. Anyway, I met it somewhere there and I should have looked it up. I could have looked it up somehow, I guess.
It's okay.
Maybe. I don't know if it was widely published.
Mm. Okay.
Neptune in the 11th house might even show, like, starting, it seems like a religious kind of fervor, or because it has to do with organizations, but it's very spiritual, like a spiritual organization. I don't know if the 11th house is associated with religion, but definitely with groups and
group goals. And then, you know, so it's a Neptunian group goal and it's trining into her, to his, Uranus, Jupiter, Moon, and Sun.
Yes.
And so that I could see that as certainly a viable chart for Jesus also. I'm inclined to go with, personally, I'm inclined to go with the Piscean chart if we're going to pick one of these two, because the incredible empathy and connection to the universe that Jesus seemed to have, you know, I can see the Scorpio rising magician, but to be able to tap into magic, you've got to be able to tap into the energy that exists. And you've got to be, have, I think, the awareness of a Piscean kind of an energy, which that chart with six planets in Pisces certainly does it. Although, as Bart pointed out, a wild Mercury, it's not really aspecting anything else in the chart, which is interesting because, and it's an Aquarius, like the, so forward thinking, but it's not connected to the rest of the chart.
I just want to mention, if it wasn't mentioned already because of the hearing problems, that the Piscean chart does have a little star of Bethlehem in that stellium down there.
I don't follow.
You have that stellium with Venus, Saturn, the Sun, the Moon, Jupiter, and I mean nobody saw Uranus in there, so that doesn't count.
Oh, the light in the sky you're saying is those being combined. I see what you're saying. Okay. That would stand in for the star of Bethlehem.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Although I know some people thought the star of Bethlehem was some sort of a supernova, but I wasn't there, so I wouldn't know.
The Chinese were pretty good at recording those things, and they didn't record any.
Okay.
It was a foggy day.
There's that possibility, too. Okay.
Foggy day in China. Sounds like an airplane novel.
Mm.
Hi, this is Julie. If I were to take this chart and say I didn't know the person, and somebody said, oh, okay, what is this person's profession? The first thing I would see would be Mars at the apex and Mars in Virgo, which is an earth sign. And I've read a lot about how people who have strong Mars work with their hands, whether they're surgeons or they work with metal objects a lot. And that would tie into the carpenter.
That Mars rules carpentry.
So, you know, if I pretend I don't know this person, what do they do for a living, et cetera, you know, I would see that and I go, oh, you know, they have a Mars ruled profession as far as, you know, how do they earn their money? And so I just wanted to, and then also they've got Capricorn on the second house, which is also another earthy thing, and as well as Taurus on the sixth. So just wanted to, I'm a vote for the Piscean chart myself, because I love the concept of Jesus being sort of like the vagabond. He was a wanderer. He didn't wear fancy clothes. You know, all these sort of things tie into that Sagittarian gypsy image on the ascendant. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's tricky though about this Pisces stellium is that you're having such tight Pluto oppositions.
Lean a little tighter, Danny.
The Pluto oppositions really alter this Pisces energy in this chart. I'm curious, Diane, what you make of those.
Oops, Danny, I couldn't hear you.
He kind of said that, how do you tie in that Pluto opposition to all that Pisces? Is that right, Danny? Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, so let her rip, Diane. I mean, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I think it has to do with his death, which is, I mean, it's like that Pluto ties in with his message, I mean, of being a martyr and being a teacher and, that's what I think it has to do with. And I've always seen Virgo and Pisces as having to do with service to others. Mm. And so I think that, you know, intense Pluto it touches lots of stuff in this chart and, has aspect to lots of different things. And I think it just gave it an intense amount of service, and that's what he spent the last 3 years of his life was teaching and serving others.
You know, what also the thing to mention is that, I mean, there's always been a certain anti-authority quality to Jesus. So you've got, you know, Uranus opposite Pluto, which is certainly going to put you into trouble with the powers that be. And honestly, you can go back to the parable of the story of him as a kid walking in the church and smart mouthing the elders,
you know, by saying you don't know the Bible and I know the, or whatever was the, you know, and kind of knowing more than they did about it, even as a young boy. So I can see that the Pluto opposition also just being the general story of his life. You know, he was always kind of running for his life in a way, because people were always, they wanted to talk to him. They wanted to connect with him. And the other people wanted to kind of crush him on some level. You know,
Diane, can I ask one other question?
A little louder, Danny, if you can.
Jocelyn just brought this up, which is the grand trine in the Leo chart.
Okay, one sec. I'll bring that down. Okay, there's the Leo chart.
Now, Jesus wasn't lazy. So it's sort of hard to see Jesus having a grand trine.
Right? Okay.
What do you think?
Well, first of all, okay, Diane, sorry.
Well, I was just thinking, well, there may be, I wouldn't go along with that. I think that's probably true. What were you going to say, Tony?
That was Bart. Bart, you were going to say something, not me.
Yeah, Bart, yeah, I am Bart and I'm an astrologer. Anyway, one thing which I do see, and of course, part of the grand trine is in Uranus, which was not discovered yet back then. But when I have clients with grand trines, there's one piece in that grand trine, which is the Uranus opposition with Mercury and to a lesser extent Pluto, and that's it very neatly bisects. It goes right through the grand trine, and I find that you can use that axis to kind of energize the grand trine. If you can take hold of that opposition, you can add energy. A grand trine can lead to laziness, because if something isn't any effort, you know, it's like, I don't know if you ever had knew anybody in school who could get B's and everything without studying and therefore never bothered studying. And Jesus is the kind of person who could, who by, you know, Uranus Mercury, by looking at things in a lateral way, taking shortcuts, could come out with new solutions that nobody else could come to. And grand trine in water can often indicate a, it's in air, isn't it?
No, the grand trine's in Cancer to Pisces to Scorpio.
There it is, Pisces, you're right. Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking of something else, yeah.
The other G.
Scorpio, okay, yeah, I was looking at the wrong piece, okay. Yeah, the grand trine in water, I was right the first time, has been indicative of someone who can be a leader in a religious sense, who can have a basic understanding of people's emotions. And as I said, with that Uranus Mercury, that they can take knowledge, they can combine knowledge and emotion in novel ways. And of course, that's looking backwards. That's knowing the ending of the story and then trying to figure out what the story was.
Our friend in the chat room, Lerugayan, I don't know how to pronounce this. And just in case anyone's interested, there's an asteroid called Lucifer. I suppose.
There's also a planet called Lucifer.
Okay. And Lucifer just means bringer of light. So let's not even get into the whole story of how Lucifer's gotten a bad name. No, it'd be interesting, you know, actually to progress both of these charts to when he was 33. I mean, if that's when he got the axe or the cross, so to speak, you know, it would put his, if it was Leo, it would put his son almost at the very end of Virgo. And hold on a second. Let's go up to the other one. So I have this little sticky here getting these. Come on, let's get the. Now this, because this would put his son into a little in, into Aries when he got when he gets killed.
At least. Yeah.
I'm no, I'm on. I am.
Wait, who's speaking? You're welcome to speak. We just got to find you.
Oh, I have one. I do have another comment about the Jesus's Leo chart, and that is part of the New Testament got kind of screwed up by one of the three people who wrote as Paulus Tarsus. What happened back then was that if there was a writer you respected, you'd use his name in your writings, which caused some confusion. And one of them had it really in for the Pharisees, and changed a number of things. Because if you take a look at the descriptions, for a good example is the adulteress, where at no point was anybody about to be stoned. It was the Pharisees simply posed that as the question should she be stoned? And if you know how the Pharisees worked, they didn't ask these questions about people they wanted to annoy or they wanted to injure. They did this. They asked questions like that of people whose ideas they respected. They wanted Jesus to come out with a good answer. And seeing Jesus as Jesus Leo, as I said, does indicate a talent for teaching. Actually, Jesus Pisces is an even more one, but Jesus as Leo shows a talent for coming up with unusual ideas. You have that third ninth axis in the Jesus Pisces, which shows teaching as an avocation.
Okay, let's see. Got more comments in the chat room. Jocelyn says she'd argue that Jesus is more of a moon opposite Pluto than moon loosely sextile Pluto. She doubts Mary was on board with the son sacrificing his life for mankind. Okay. And then somebody, Julia says, Jupiter opposite Pluto, and he transformed the faith of many. So, it looks like we could come up with arguments for both. Maybe somebody knows their Bible better than me. How much earlier than Jesus was John the Baptist born?
About 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So it's about the difference between these two charts.
And John
I thought maybe one was, and John the Baptist was born first. And so I thought, well, maybe this first chart was John the Baptist and the second one was Jesus. But
John the Baptist was such an ornery kind of a guy. He was sort of a wild man. He was, I don't see him as necessarily being very Piscean.
He was an Essene.
No, I think it went the other way. I think, I see what you're saying. But he
before Jesus, then if Jesus, I don't see, if Jesus was the Leo, I don't see John as the Piscean character. That's what I mean.
But I see him as kind of a mystic. He was going out baptizing everybody. He was really spiritual. He was I could see him being a Pisces. However, I see Jesus as kind of the epitome of a Pisces.
Yeah.
Everything he did was Piscean. He was
and of course in many ways you could look at the Christ consciousness kicking off the age of Pisces.
Right.
So the next 2,000 years are going to be the age of Pisces. It would make sense that one of the more dominant figures of the next 2,000 years would be somebody with six bloody planets in Pisces. but if 6 months earlier that makes what, John the Baptist or Virgo? Maybe, See, the thing about John the Baptist is that he suddenly, like, he's very spiritual. He's baptizing anybody. Well, did baptism exist then? Did he just suddenly go, I'm going to just go around pouring water on everybody and you're going to be, did he start something new? Does anybody know their Bible history? Go ahead.
Yeah, there was there was an obscure group that we know of from the Qunan sources that predated John the Baptist that were doing baptisms. And he fell in with these people and learned the baptism rites from them and then sort of supersized it in the River Jordan.
They were called the Essenes.
Yeah, there was a whole thing there.
They were very aesthetic. The Dead Sea Scrolls come from them.
Yeah. Who knows? You know, I mean, you know, when you think about water and all the water in this Pisces chart and how John the Baptist mostly worked with water, I can see that. But you can also make a great case that it's Jesus. This is just such a fun, like, thought experiment. Thank you for this, Diane.
Yeah.
Like a fun.
Look, if nothing else, this March 1st, 7 BC chart is pretty intense regardless. You know, with that much, I mean, they're all close enough where they, you know, I always call, the stellium's not all conjunct, but I always call it guilt by association. Mm-hmm. Where like, well, if the moon's conjunct the sun and the sun's conjunct Saturn and Saturn's conjunct Mercury, then you're dragging them all in. That's pretty potent. You don't see that often. I think there was a similar stellium in 1962 with Aquarius. It was like about six planets in Aquarius in like February of 62. But so maybe another savior is coming along. I don't know. But that's pretty, and it being opposite Pluto is such a powerful thing, you know.
The stellium in Aquarius, the Hindu astrologers thought the world was coming to an end. But a lot of Western astrologers thought that was kind of the beginning when people would start being their own religious leaders, start finding out how to connect to God through themselves rather than through somebody else, you know, kind of an equality of everybody can find God on his or her own without having to have an intermediary. And I can kind of see that, you know, a lot of religions are starting to become less dogmatic. They're starting to allow their members to think for themselves and question, you know, so, and around the world, there are far fewer people going to organized churches. You know, they're starting to think for themselves and their own spirituality. So
I agree with that. Look, part of it, I know some astrologers claim that was the beginning of the age of Aquarius. I'm not even going to get into that, but I will say there has been a big increase in the past 20, 30 years of people who say they're spiritual but have no religion, mm-hmm. which is what you're kind of talking about, which I think is all – I personally believe spiritually or metaphorically we're kind of knee-deep into the Aquarian age at this point. And I think that's part of the turmoil that's going on now as, you know, we're trying to move forward. Some of the parts have fallen into place. Spirituality is becoming much more individualized. People's choices are becoming more individualized. We're breaking up corporations. People are saying, go work for yourself. So I think we're in the midst of the transformation, but of course, you know, nothing happens quietly. Just a side thing, by the way, somebody said that John the Baptist, it could have been a Leo with all that hair. Okay. Which would put it about 6 months before the Pisces chart, roughly. You know, it's not Virgo, but you move about 7 months before and you got that Leo stuff.
Sorry. I just wanted to, I'm sorry, I lost track of what I was saying. I apologize.
Sorry about that. Didn't mean to.
No, that's okay.
Aquarius, freedom, people, individuality. Anyway.
Oh yes, now I remember.
Okay.
I've come to realize that when most people say I'm spiritual, not religious, in general what they mean is they define spirituality as what I believe and religion is what they believe.
Yeah, probably. But maybe that's what it's about. If it's the individual in relationship to society, then everybody's religion is their individual spirituality. You know, I always have trouble with religion primarily because it applies blanket rules to everybody. And as an astrologer, it's pretty damn clear that none of us are even vaguely alike.
Okay. There's so many different motivations and stuff that it's not, I don't think religion can be a one size fits all is what I'm sort of saying. Jocelyn points out, by the way, that the Piscean chart gives Jesus a balsamic moon, which is big karmic debt and closure. And Danny likes that. And I do too, actually. Oh, I'm in the chat room, by the way, in case anybody's wondering where I'm pulling this from.
So, Tony, can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Who's speaking now?
It's Don.
Okay, Don. Okay. Go ahead.
Hi. You know what I was thinking? It seems to me like I know like that astrologer, Moby Dick. I think his name was Donald Jacobs, mm-hmm. and his nickname was Moby Dick.
Right.
Okay.
And but most of these folks used the Star of Bethlehem to try to figure out Jesus' chart. I think that's what he was doing as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He had a son named Tom Jacobs who was an astrologer in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still doing astrology, but for me to use this chart, you know, I was certainly giving Moby Dick credit for him finding the chart when I wrote the story. But I called Tom Jacobs and he told me I had to get his permission in order to do that because his father had passed on. And then my editor said, well, that's ridiculous. Anybody can use any chart.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, I did give Moby Dick credit when I wrote this story.
Well, you know, Don, if we don't start with something, you know, I mean, I sort of saw Bethlehem being certainly a decent starting place.
Yeah.
We could end up doing charts, like 57 different charts for like a 10-year period and drive ourselves nuts with it.
So it's very interesting because, you know, you try to figure out at what time, at that time, what could have been, you know, was there really something in the sky that people had noticed? Was it a comet? Was it a conjunction of Jupiter and Venus, that sort of thing? So a number of people have done work on this, and it's very interesting when you see, you know, the charts that come up from that.
So. Yeah, we could probably do a whole night of looking at Jesus charts.
Yes.
although well, one thing, go ahead, go ahead.
One thing Moby Dick said about the Pisces chart was, if this wasn't Jesus's chart, whose chart was it? Because it looks so phenomenal and so different from the charts.
Yeah, I could see that. By the way, the other thing to mention, the people who study writing and biblical scholars have pointed out that the three wise men were clearly a later addition to the initial story.
Hmm.
So, because people who know how to read and watch the way sentences, like I guess they're a form of forensic, people work for forensics of writing, they can tell when things have been inserted. So, of course, the three wise men were also probably astrologers, so I'm always in favor of them. But it may have been added later to push the Jesus myth. I'm not arguing whether or not Jesus existed, but clearly there are a lot of stories attached to him that are apocryphal or just put together as, you know, hey, this is our guy. He did this and this and this, you know.
So, actually, the three magi was my favorite story of the whole thing, you know, because it's just like a magical,
yeah,
you know. But if anyone's interested, Chris Brennan, who does the astrology podcast,
oh, he's great, yeah.
I think it was episode 58. He did a whole episode entirely on the Bethlehem star and what it might have been astrologically. It's very interesting. If anyone's interested, you should check that out.
Diane,
this is Mark. Yes.
I have there's something which you said a little early on, but I didn't quite get it. This is something which I did a little bit of a study on about 25 years ago. What translation do you use? What translations?
Oh my gosh, I have several different versions of Bible. I think probably the one I grabbed was the Catholic version, I think it's a Douay Bible.
Yeah, because one problem I came up with, and I won't go into why I was doing the studies, but translators have a bit of a problem when the Bible deals with anything having to do with what's under the general sobriquet of magic, because what happens is if they don't translate it carefully, they're being sloppy as scholars. But if they translate it carefully, then everybody says, you're being serious about magic, and everybody looks down on them. And they chose, and so if you take a look, a lot of the passages having to do with anything to do with magic, including any kind of divination, including astrology, tends to be very poorly translated. You also have the problem that King James had a little political push on some of the translations. One of the famous ones, which have been translated several different ways, which is "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," uses a Hebrew construction which is just not found anywhere else. And the only thing that philologically you can get by a witch is someone who uses magic to harm other people. And when they suffer to live, it could mean kill them, it could mean don't hire them, it means don't let them have a house in your town. And in astrology, I went through, and as I said, this was 25 years ago, so I did not have my notes handy, but it looks like the only thing the Bible has against astrology, especially if you look in context, is don't rely on it. As a matter of fact, that's when I started using my slogan, you should rule your chart and not let your chart rule you, because that's essentially what the Bible says.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about translations and so on, one of the things that I'm really aware of is, it is, and you were talking about the political climate of when the translation was going on, but culturally, the culture of Jesus's time is so different from ours. And the language was so different. The language Jesus spoke does not have the verb to be. It does not have the verb, you know, is. And it also didn't have punctuation. So translating it out of context of that culture, with no periods and commas, with no verbs to be, it is really difficult. And I had a rabbi tell me once, one of the things that a lot of fundamental Christians say is that Jesus said, no one can get to the Father except through me. Nice. Well, that's a valid translation. However, if you insert the word is, an equally valid translation would be, nobody can get to the Father except the way that I did. Or the way, the truth, and the life, you know, it could be the way, no, it says, I am the way, the truth, and the light. Well, that's one way you could translate it. Another way might be, I am is the way, the truth, and the light. And, you know, in the Old Testament, God's name was I am that I am. So, you know, it's, and God is the way, the truth, and the light. Not Jesus is the only way to get, you know.
You know, philosophically, I always thought that when you ask somebody whose God is and you use his name, what you're saying is, I am. Like, who's God? I am. Well, mm-hmm. That's his name, but it's also the sentence that you're saying. So that's one of the reasons I'm a pantheist personally. I think everybody's God, but that's a whole other ballgame. But I do find it interesting that, yes, that's the name of what they call God in the past, is I am what I am. You know. Mm-hmm. So, translation is always tricky. And the context of the time, you know, I think sometimes some of the humor in this scripture is lost. Like when Jesus said, love one another, you know, love one another. That's not the one I'm looking at. Wait a second. Do unto others if you'd have them do unto you. People didn't love each other. People didn't trust each other. So it was kind of almost a joke that he was saying that. It was almost like a form of humor. Of like, you know, trust anybody the same way they trust you. And then people are going to be like, what? Because what he was saying was so radical. Because he's taking us from an age of Aries, me, me, me. And not even ego me. It's not even the Leo me. It's just sort of like, I'm doing whatever I want to do. Into an age of Pisces where it's like, I'm supposed to consider everybody around me. It's like, are you out of your mind? You know, you're coming out of an Aries age. So he was really, given the context of a lot of what I believe his message was, incredibly radical for the time. You know, stop clanging each other with swords and do whatever the hell you want. Cooperate with each other, connect with each other, you know. So
historically Jesus came, there were two major schools of rabbinic schools of teaching. when Jesus was alive. There was the school of Hillel and the school of Shammai. And the Sadducees came from the school of Shammai, and the Pharisees came from the school of Hillel. And Jesus was a member of the Pharisees. The school of Shammai was the Sadducees was treat the law literally. The law is first. You have to. They were very fundamentalist. The school of Hillel was more humanistic. That the law was made for humanity, not humanity for the law. And Hillel coined the negative version, which is do not do to others what you would not want someone to do to yourself. Jesus used the positive form of the same teaching.
Hmm. And, you know, there historically, it was actually a period of time when there were a lot of new religious beliefs. I mean, a lot of them didn't survive, but there were a lot of little sects and cults and things that came up. And there were some people that believed some of these stories were folded into the story of Jesus. Like there are some people that believe the guy who ran around the temple turning over the tables is not necessarily the same guy who, you know, fed the masses with the fishes and the bread. I'm just putting this out there as what I've read. I'm not saying I support it or don't, but it was, well, what is it? In the 1800s, we had what was referred to as the Second Great Awakening. We had another period of all these religions suddenly popping up out of nowhere, you know, from the Mormons to all those Protestant sects to the beginning of, Theosophy, all these spiritual beliefs and the spiritualism became very popular at the time too. So I believe, as I understand it, that period of time that Jesus was born and lived was already rife with new ideas of spirituality and religion. And
you're totally right that it was rife with new ideas.
They what?
Totally rife with new ideas. You know, what's really hard about this conversation is there are so many levels here.
Yeah.
The four canonical gospels are not the closest witnesses to the life of Jesus. There are other texts that were destroyed, and there are other texts that are called the Apocrypha, which basically means St. Jerome thought they were crap, and the church thought they were crap. So, you know.
And they couldn't possibly have an agenda. Go ahead.
Right. And then the other issue is there is considerable variance in manuscripts of the Bible. And a lot of people don't want to talk about this because it gives everyone a headache. But the extant manuscripts that we have don't all have the same Greek, and they don't all have the same Hebrew. And so in the 19th century, scholars sort of got together to create what's called a critical edition. And some of that work has been challenged recently. So there's a lot of layers here, you know, and whenever there's no such thing as an authoritative translation. I don't know if you guys follow, but there are actually some new translations that have just come out. One by a major Hebrew scholar who redid all of the Old Testament. And Hebrew is a very corporal and guttural language. It's a very bodily language. And for a lot of our history, we have actually toned down the Old Testament. And then you have the Greek problem for the New Testament, which is, do you translate it literally when we don't have the same metaphors? Or do you switch around the metaphors and lose the literal Greek, but put it in a way that people can understand? You know, like, for example, like in French, when you want to say it's raining really hard, you say it's raining pissing cows, which that expression makes absolutely no sense in English, but in French, that's their image. And so these are just problems that you get when we try to talk about biblical hermeneutics.
And for that matter, you also have to add Aramaic into the New Testament too, along with the Greek, you know, so yeah, no, yeah.
All the Aramaic has been translated.
The book of Matthew is in terrible Greek, but if you translate word for word into Aramaic, it's perfectly grammar in Aramaic.
Yeah, exactly.
Strange.
Thank you so much. This has been like a really fun. This has just been a really fun exploration. The two charts were really fun. I actually have to go pretty soon here, so I gotta sign off. But.
Okay. Well, we're kind of wrapping up here. I don't want to stop any conversation, but I'm saying if we want, we could have a little Q&A question afterwards if anybody has any questions about astrology. But And I do want to mention Diane, D-I-A-N-N-E, two N's, Lawson, L-A-W-S-O-N.com is where you can find her. She's written a great book about relationships. Any other questions? I'm not closing it out. I just wanted to mention that before we go farther. Anything else? Questions, comments about the Bible, comments about questions, whatever?
Before, you were talking about baptism. But in Judaism, you have a mikveh. So, you know, every month, women, when they finish their period, they go and they have a ritual bath. It's supposed to be, you know, this transformation from impurity to purity, which I don't know if I exactly agree with that symbolism, but that's what it, you know, that's what it's supposed to represent. And I thought it was only for women, but so I know I had heard men sometimes also go to a mikveh. And then I just looked it up when, after you had that conversation, and it said men would go for, you know, for Shabbat, sometimes they would go to the mikveh or for special holidays. Also, when people convert to Judaism, they do a mikveh. So I'm wondering, you know, if he took it from, you know, if that's where it was coming from. So,
yeah. Just to answer your question, there was a lot of water play going on in Jesus's time.
yeah.
Sorry.
Water sports. Okay.
There was a lot of water sports. So, and a lot of different people who were all concurrently doing that. And obviously John, when he pioneered this new idea of baptizing in the River Jordan, which no one had done previously. No one had made the River Jordan a site of baptism before. So that was John's, the Baptist's, unique twist on it. But yes, he was obviously drawing on this history of purification rites. And purification rites with water was sort of the hot thing right before Jesus was around. That was like the hot new, the hot new thing. So yeah, and some of it survived afterwards in different contexts. So yeah, it's a great point you made. Really great point. Thank you for that.
And I don't know if anybody's noticed, but apparently with the quarantining, some ministers are baptizing with water pistols to keep the distance. Like the baby's 6 feet away and they're squirting the baby from like 6 feet away. It's all done very seriously, but I just thought, I wish I had been baptized that way.
Wow. Like a super soaker baptism. Yeah.
I have blessed this water squirter.
Wow. Yeah. Someone's going to see a picture of that in 1,000 years and they're going to come up with all these different interpretations.
Right. There was a science fiction story where they saw this. They saw people go to this planet, and they see a place which is obviously a house of worship, and they see a member of the race being horribly tortured. And they said, "This must be an extremely cruel people." And of course, it was aliens coming to Earth and seeing his crucifix.
Yeah,
yeah, and as
you know. Yeah, Tony, just one last point on that.
Hey, Donald.
Hi. I'm certainly not a biblical scholar, for sure, but from what I've read is, and I always find this really interesting, if you take away all the mythic aspects of the four Gospels, you know, the forgiveness of sin and the descending to hell and all that stuff, and you just look at what the preaching was about the kingdom of God is in front of us and we don't see it. Mm-hmm. And that's very Buddhist aspect. So a lot of people actually see, you know, Jesus as basically a Buddhist. And it's funny because what they call the big boat Buddhism came out around the same time, although in a different geographic location, but at about the same time. So I always found that to be very interesting.
Well, there are some people that believe that his missing years may have been spent traveling and perhaps studying Buddhism. I just saying that's some of the theory out there.
Or in canon Egypt.
I think that's a point that you just raised, John, about the kingdom of God. And the one thing to add to that is that the early Christians did not perceive themselves as under Caesar. They perceived themselves as under Jesus. So when you hear that phrase, the kingdom of God, it was because they were trying to participate in a different political order. And I think that the analogy of Buddhism is really fascinating. There's a lot in those early texts that is, I don't know, I feel like shoved under the carpet, shoved under the rug. Right, Diane? Don't you feel that way too? Like, there's a lot there that's like, really? Whoa, okay.
Yeah. I think they sanitized Jesus. Over the years, the people in control sanitized a lot of Jesus to make him more of a symbol of shut up and get back to work, as opposed to actually the radical qualities that Jesus actually had. Yeah. Your reward's coming in the next life. It's like, then what the hell is the point of this life? You know? So, and I'm not even touching that. I'm just saying that's just a thought. But it's about 9, so we can wrap up. I do want to mention one of my favorite comedians, Bill Hicks, said that if Jesus came back tomorrow, do you really think he'd want to see a lot of crucifixes?
Wow.
I just thought, yeah, it's a lot. Right. See, thanks for that memory. Okay. So, Diane, thank you very, very much. And thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. Diane will be putting this on her website. So if you missed anything, if you know somebody that wants to hear it, it's there. And any other comments? Otherwise, I'll end the meeting. Take it. Anybody? Going once?
I want to thank you so much for having me. I've always thought you were a great astrologer. And
thank you.
It's a great group. It's really fun and knowledgeable and it was great to be here, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. In a couple of, sometime in the next month or so, Diane's going to be back on my radio show, if you know about that, and we're going to kick this topic around some more. So if you keep an eye on me on Facebook and Cosmic Tuesdays, Diane will be on later, probably in September or maybe late August. So going once, going twice. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next month when we figure out what we're going to do. And take care and stay healthy.
Don't we have somebody for next month already?
We'll talk.
Okay.
We're pulling them out of our hat as we go along. So, all right then. Night all. See you next month.
Bye.